chaps, I don't know if you've read the latest edition of The Lancet. There's going on about whether evil is an actual medical condition.
Yeah, I caught that.
And they focused on social media.
Yeah.
And they were talking about podcasters, funnily enough.
Evil podcasters.
Yeah, well, they were saying that if you gathered a whole load of podcasters together, one in four is genuinely evil.
There's four of us in this room.
There are. Oh, God, it's Adam, isn't
it? It's got to be. I mean, look at the eyes. The eyes. The hair proves it.
It does.
Just get the blade.
Except.
Scott, what are you doing? Put the puppy down, Scott.
No, don't do that,
no,
Scott.
That's not a spoon. No! Oh, God, it popped. Welcome, welcome, welcome to this in the latest of a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. Ooh. I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Master Man.
And I, yes, I am...
covered in oil and very squeezable.
Ooh.
Okay.
Now, we have no Crumbly today because it's a bank holiday, so he's with Fake Crumbly.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no Jean because she got COVID and we didn't want the cow to infect us again. So
100% success rate last time.
Yeah, 0% this time. Yeah. Stay at home, Riddler, and get better. And now, on to the news with El Presidente.
Doctor Who News!
Ooh.
Yay! Woo-hoo. Cinematic simultaneous release.
Ooh, it's been a while.
It feels like it's barely started, but already the Doctor Who finale is nearly upon us. Those of us in the UK and Ireland, i.e. not directly subject to Disney Plus's Whoish whims, will be able to see the two-part finale in the cinema.
Got tickets! Woo! Yep. Thank you, unlimited card.
The event will be held on the 31st of May and kick off a repeat of the penultimate episode, first broadcast on the much-mentioned date of the 24th of May, and then follow into the new episode at roughly the same time as broadcast. Last year is a good 10 minutes so late, but... rumours are suggesting that the iPlayer release of the final episode may not go out early in the morning,
ooh,
as has been the custom this season, but instead at the same time as the BBC One broadcast, perhaps to help with cinema ticket sales. If true, then it remains to be seen if Disney will hold off too. Probably not.
So what was the last one that was at the cinema?
It was the finale last season.
I missed that one.
Are you coming to this one?
I am coming to this one,
Have you got a seat next to us?
Not sure. We'll have to check that out, because I haven't booked yet.
We'll find each other in the foyer or whatever.
We will annoy people by going, Scott, did you like that bit?
I'm at the back.
Oh, you've got a great view.
Because I missed Capaldi, didn't I? Because all of a sudden I had to have my op.
Yes.
Annoyingly.
Oh, yeah.
It was either, I watch Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, or do I have my brain mended as, you know, everyone suggested. It was close, though, wasn't it?
It was, after all that gushing on the podcast.
Oh, yeah. And that was just the head, you know.
Yeah.
Have you inserted the USB port yet?
Not quite yet. The technology isn't quite there.
Oh, you'll have to tell us when it is. We can use you to charge up.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Store intimate bits of information.
In his head.
In his head.
Yeah, get a couple of terabytes here or there.
It's either him or Adam.
Yeah.
I'd rather store them in his head.
Further Doctor Who news.
Oh, right.
New Target books.
Ooh.
Four new Target books are on their way, all from the current Gatwa era of Doctor Who. Mm. They are Empire of Death by Scott Hancock, The Robot Revolution by Una McCormack, Lux by James Goss, and The Well by Gareth L. Powell. They will be released on the 10th of July, and a further duo of books will be released on the 9th of October. Both are adaptations of Big Finish stories by Robert Shearman, both by the original author himself, namely Jubilee and the Chimes of Midnight.
Oh, I wonder what the Chimes of Midnight will be like in book form.
Yeah,
will it be quite the same?
No, he usually does it slightly differently for his adaptations.
Well, he was saying yesterday at the BFI.
Yeah, he's saying at the BFI... certainly for Jubilee, was written as his experiences as a 30-year-old man, whereas Jubilee, the Dalek was written from about 10 years later. So.
Yeah,
the novel of Dalek he wrote 15, 20 years later, and it has a very different emphasis.
So this is going to be like the fourth variation of that plot point.
It's the third. Yeah, got the original Jubilee. We got Dalek. Yeah. Then the Dalek book, I suppose. Yeah. And now this.
Jubilee with him as a 98-year-old man.
Talking about milking the cow.
If the cow's giving milk, take it.
Yeah.
Right. Returning series: Resident Alien, The Sandman, and Wednesday.
Ooh.
The Syfy Channel apparently still exists in some form, and that's great news for Resident Alien, as its fourth series is coming on the 6th of June. Mm. Alan Tudyk and chums are returning to protect Earth from an increasing number of potential alien invaders for comedic effect. Netflix have announced that the second and final season of The Sandman will be split into two volumes. Six episodes will drop on the 3rd of July, and the final five will appear on the 24th of July. Also back after just under 3 years is Wednesday. Yes, the first season really was back in 2022, though admittedly in November of 2022. This new season is also being carved up, just like Sandman, with half of the 8 episodes releasing on the 6th of August and the final 4 on the 3rd of September. I'm so looking forward to Wednesday. And I'm so looking forward to The Sandman. I never even got to the end of the first season of Resident Evil. Not because I didn't like it, but I just lost track of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not up to date with it. I think I haven't seen most of the third season yet.
I think it's been Resident Evil is currently on Netflix.
Oh, Resident Alien is on Netflix.
Sorry,
okay.
It's been popping up on the things you may like.
So it looks like we've got to subscribe about 3 solid months there for Sandman 1 and 2, and then Wednesday 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
cunning there.
That's right, we were subscribed anyway.
So we're currently working our way through Andor, aren't we?
Yes, I'm two-thirds of the way through Disney, through season 1 of Andor. And Construct number 2 has just binged the entirety of the first season so that he can watch the second season.
Good, right.
Yeah.
Have you got to the prison arc yet?
No, not yet.
I've got up to the bit where he's teamed up with the rebels and they're about to go with the dam. They're about to head into that.
With Shinta.
Yes. Yeah.
And he nearly stepped over the line. Real Keith nearly stepped over the line. He has this habit, which he's aware of, I found cute until I have to punch him, that when you're watching something that he's been saying, oh, you'll really like this, and you finally do watch it, he has a habit of going, oh, this bit's good. Would you shush? I want to find this bit. Okay, I'm sorry. And then someone will walk on screen and he'll go, please stop doing that. I'm sorry. I've got to make a cup of tea.
And then he
walks in and goes, oh, this bit, oh, this is brilliant. Right, that's it, I'm not watching it.
I sit in the corner with my hands wrapped around my mouth.
Quivering.
Yes.
Do you recognise Belinda?
Oh, yeah.
You do.
Yeah. She's a nurse as well.
Is she a nurse in that one?
She's the medico.
She bandages him up.
Remember that bit, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, any addendums? No addendums? Why are you bouncing?
I have two, count them, two addendums.
Scott, do you have any addendums?
I have no addendums.
Oh, Adam, do you?
Keith, take a quick look.
Okay.
Keith never shares his addendums.
No,
he's
very selfish that way, isn't he? Would you like to share your addendums with us?
Okay, addendums. My first addendum is actually a real world addendum.
Ooh.
I think not normally.
If you're leaving me, this is a hell of a way to tell me.
Well, actually.
In other news, real Keith is divorcing fake Keith.
No. CERN with the great big...
Large Hadron Collider.
Thank you, Large Hadron.
Listeners, if you could have seen the mime for the last...
Circular. Like a great big donut.
Above his head.
They have produced an antimatter containment unit.
Oh, this is worrisome.
Yeah, CERN is the only place that they can really produce antimatter at the moment. And obviously it's highly unstable, combines with matter, goes pop, and they can't transport it anywhere.
Goes pop?
Okay. A defiant, definite pop, but pop nonetheless. But they have produced a containment unit that they have actually loaded onto the back of the lorry and driven it around the CERN site with no ill effects.
Oh, what, in the above the head loop?
Yeah, above the loop. They've driven it around the entire ground. So that's the first step to transporting antimatter to other places and utilising it elsewhere.
Yeah, don't let water peck near the containment unit.
No.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Hmm. How do they know they've got antimatter in the container?
Like Schrodinger's cat, isn't it?
But yeah, I was going to say, I could just... See this box here?
This pizza box.
There's some antimatter in there. Prove to me... Well, proving to me there isn't is quite easy. But, you know, I could take that box on a lorry and drive it round the CERN donut and you'd never know.
My second addendum...
Yes.
...is we have Eurovision this year.
Yes, we do. Yes. And our song is awesome.
But a certain actor has been confirmed as the UK spokesperson for the Eurovision Song Contest of 2025.
It's Shooty!
It's Shooty! Okay. Shooty Gatwa has announced that the British jury points for each participating country's song will be him. Previous spokespersons have included Joanne Lumley, Fern Cotton, Nigella Lawson and Catherine Tate.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't know it was a thing.
No, apparently it is. I mean, in my head, Eurovision is still presented by Terry Wogan and some random person on the end of a phone very badly in whatever broad accent reads out the...
Everybody's nilpaw and all that. Yeah.
Apparently it's not that way anymore. This is how long it's been since we've seen Eurovision. Terry Wogan's been dead for 58 years for a start.
I don't usually watch.
No.
I'd hoped it would have stopped because we're no longer in Europe with Brexit. But
Australia are in Eurovision.
Yeah, I know.
What day is that? Does that coincide with the finale or the...
I honestly... Well, I know we've got a Eurovision in Space episode coming up.
Oh, really? All right.
Perhaps they...
Please don't let that be the finale.
So it's the 17th of May.
Yep.
So that probably will coincide with the
Eurovision
whatever
episode.
This Space Eurovision is that you're talking about. Because it won't be the final two, I assume.
Yeah, so if it's 17th, it will be. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that one. That could be quite fun.
I'm addendum out. That's all I have.
And that's the end of the news.
Woo!
Well, first of all, happy birthday to Adam.
Oh, yes.
Who had a birthday a couple of days ago.
Yes.
He got some lovely presents. Mm-hmm. What did you get?
What did I get? Let's see, I got another goat.
Sweetums. I figured Siobhan started some wonderful shithousery. Yeah. And it needed to continue. So Sweetums, the baby goat, has been added to the collection.
Yes.
Purple.
More cartoony sort of goat than the other goats.
That's it. Purple
Don't
polka dots.
Say that in front of her. That's what baby goats look like.
With teeny tiny
horns. Huge eyes.
She's a baby. And also Sandy, the stormtrooper.
Yeah, the sand trooper.
The rather chunky stormtrooper.
Yeah. This is probably the modern word.
That actually looks more like a Warhammer 40,000.
Does, yeah.
He looks awesome.
He does look rather cool.
He's got a shoulder launcher
He has. Almost my height, isn't he?
We hope you had a good birthday.
I did, thank you.
Is that a poster of Hoff? I don't recognise.
Yes, that's a new one as well. Yeah. I've got so many things we put on the wall.
you need to build more walls.
I do need more walls.
Okay, well, as everyone knows, we're slap bang in the middle of the new series of Doctor Who, so we've naturally been watching that.
Okay.
Pause for music.
Woo-wee-woo.
Okay, what was first?
The first one was The Well.
Well.
Episodes 1 and 2, I thought, were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I was really, really pleased with them both.
Yeah.
And then we got The Well.
Yes.
All right.
Bit more horror.
And I thought, oh my God, this season couldn't get any better. I don't know about you guys, at first I'm thinking, this is Shameless Aliens ripoff here.
Oh God, yeah.
And then that ended. Yeah. And it became the best sequel that we didn't know was going to happen ever in the history of the world.
And there were lots of clues, even in Murray Gold's score, wasn't there? You heard the 10th Doctor's theme, and you're like, why is that there?
Yeah.
I couldn't say it was a 10th Doctor's theme, but there was a lots of music I recognised. So there's a lot of...
Yeah.
Including that, is it Toxic, which we had way back in episode 2.
Call out to End of the World.
The Doctor actually used the word midnight before even realising what was going on.
Yeah.
So basically, we've got...
lots of dead bodies.
Yeah. They've either been shot or they've been
badly broken.
Yeah, every bone has been pulverized.
In particular, but yes.
And for some reason, all the mirrors are broken.
Yes.
I didn't know you had mirrors that much on a... it was a research station, wasn't it?
Ah, they're very vain.
It was a research station, but there was a couple of the bunks and the cabins.
Oh, yeah, yeah, where you would expect mirrors to be.
Where you'd expect a mirror to be. There's something I think I need to point out. It's a standout Shooty's performance.
Right.
We have the 15th Doctor's affectations, i.e. dressing up in various clothes and calling people babe, sweetie, love, and being very light and fluffy.
Yeah.
But as soon as it started to get real, all the affectations had gone and it was just him sorting things out dead serious.
Yeah.
There was none of the babes and the loves when the situation began to go south.
I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got the affectations of this Doctor like you've had with other Doctors, scarves, jelly babies, recorders and fluffy shirts, but it's still that core figure. When the shit goes down, I keep saying shit,
you
I do apologise.
It's very rude.
But
trouble arises.
Yeah, but yes. When the proverbial hits the fan, he's suddenly there, diamond laser focus.
Yeah.
I did like the cold open, you know, they're being very playful, as you said, with like the wardrobe room, away.
Yeah.
And they're just having a bit of a game and a laugh with everyone, and then they just get kicked out of an airlock.
Drop ship, unless you're dropping them.
That's it.
Literally.
I was at that point, the music started. My first question was, well, why is there so much gravity all of a sudden? They must be falling down to something. So,
Right, so they've searched through this station and they come to a locked door. And a la Aliens, it's like, there's a heartbeat.
Boom, 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 boom.
And I said to you, oh, it's going to be a little girl, isn't it? Yeah. You know, we're going to blatantly rip off Aliens.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
No.
It was Alice, played by Rose Ailing Ellis. And Rose is deaf.
Yes, she's a genuine deaf person.
And I loved the futuristic...
subtitles?
Yeah, it's all built in. It's just something that is.
Yeah.
It's not even given a second thought. It's like, oh, we need subtitles for her to read because she's deaf.
Yeah.
And they press a button and the words come up on their suit. It's very cool.
Yeah.
There's another line about nurses have to legally be able to sign.
Yeah.
Everything's accounted for in the future.
Maybe.
And nobody's excluded.
Yeah.
I have to ask my colleague at work, actually, because he's watching this series. He really likes the new series and he's deaf. And I'll have to ask him whether he found that useful or whether he still had the subtitles on, because I know he's okay-ish at lip reading. So, it'd be quite interesting.
And were Shooty and the others doing the sign language properly?
I'm sure they were.
Because they did have someone in to teach them, didn't they?
That's it. Watching some of the reactors, we had some of the American reactors, they reacted slightly confused because on the show they were using British sign language, not the American sign language. There is certain differences.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. There's so much of it that's similar, though. It's just some things.
Yeah.
Which implies the TARDIS is translating the hand gestures. Too, because the chance of them using British sign language.
We've had dialogue, we've had writing. I would say that it translates the impression or the meaning across.
Because we had a shout out to the TARDIS translating right before they leave as well, didn't we?
Yeah, she asks, do I speak English?
Just to remind us that that's what the TARDIS does, or let people, first timers, know that that's what the TARDIS does.
And so every now and again, they have to refresh this stuff.
Yeah. Now, Alice is a little bit upset.
Yes. Last one left.
She's the last one left alive.
She's in the room with a body.
And she's shot to kill the body.
And she said, I killed her. She was going to kill me. And then Belle sees something.
Yes.
I still didn't see it on that first jump scare.
No, there was. It was very quick, and there was a slight shadow sort of stretched out of her head.
I was trying to focus on the right spot, but I just couldn't see it.
Yeah.
But the second time, I definitely did see it.
Yeah.
And once again, they did completely the right thing in not showing the monster.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would have spoiled it.
It's the bug syndrome. I read it somewhere. As most things, everything is worse in the memory. When you finally see the monster, it's Christ, thank God it's not a 6-foot monster. You see a 6-foot monster, Jesus, thank God it's not a 20-foot monster.
Yeah.
It's definitely scarier in the mind.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Haunting of Hill House, the first making of Haunted of Hill House. They never actually showed the Ugly Bugly.
Oh, yes, we watched
in 1939. Yeah, the old black and white one. even now, that's still quite an unsettling film.
It was really good.
Yeah.
I think we actually saw that on Prime.
Could have done,
or somewhere where there were some old films. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
So Alice is aware she's got something behind her.
Yes, she's aware something is wrong.
So the doctor's there, Belle's there, and these little cohort of troopers.
Yes.
Who we were labelling Dead Body 1, Dead Body 2, because we knew some of them were going.
All of them, yeah.
And they made the mistake of circling her.
Yes.
That was very unlucky for Dead Body number 1.
Because that's when we found out if you get directly behind her,
yeah.
It gets you.
It throws you across the room quite impressively and you go crack squelch.
There's a bit of leeway because she does turn around at some points. And clearly people will have been caught up in her.
Yeah, but they weren't sweep, very close.
Well, again, if you notice, they got behind her, stood, and then. So it wasn't immediate.
That's it. She did do a quick twirl to prove there was nothing behind her. Yeah. Nothing happened then.
Yeah, so it wasn't immediately you step behind her. It was a couple of seconds and then bam.
So, of course, then we had the reveal, because the thing, whatever it is, knows the doctor's name.
Yes.
Mm. We have a flashback to that amazing scene with David Tennant and I can't remember the actress's name, where she's repeating everything he says.
The episode where they're all trapped in a
midnight.
Bus. Midnight. And it isn't obvious straight away to the Doctor because they've harvested all the diamonds from the diamond planet.
Basically, it now looks like, a quarry, the moon.
It's a huge well in the middle of it.
Strip mines.
Yes.
Yeah. So they have to go underground to get some of the
And that was a very big well.
It was.
It was very Idiot's Lantern. Not Idiot's Lantern.
Satan's Pit.
Satan's Pit,
Along the way, you discover that no one's heard of Earth or the human race.
Because Belinda's like, oh, I'm from Earth. Where? And the Doctor had told her that Earth was... We've broken out and danced everywhere.
So how did they get rid of it?
Sacrifice.
That's it. That's a very quick...
No, it was... We were told early on that the pipes have liquid mercury in them. The connection of it doesn't like its reflection, like the Mara to some extent, the reflection has an effect on it.
Cannot be seen.
Yes. So they crack the pipes behind it and you get the
sheet of mercury.
Yeah.
That expels it. They then run to the airlock.
Run like buggers.
Run like hell.
But then you have the big boom, like we had on the little thing in Midnight, the little ship they're on.
Yeah.
And that's when it got where they were.
But of course, everyone gets away, all the ones that aren't dead and squished. They all get away and it's wonderful and the Doctor and Belle go on their way I just want to do this bit. And the Chief is there, she's putting her stuff in her locker and why hasn't this ended yet? And suddenly one of her mates is like, what's that behind you? And he just focused on her eyes and it was brilliant. But
I didn't see anything behind her. And when you got in the locker, so it could possibly have just been a trick of the light and her imagination,
we don't know. And now she's living with that.
Oh, it could be. Yeah, so she didn't hear any whispers because that was her thing. Because the character, what was her name? The cook, the chef,
Alice.
Thank you, Alice. Was deaf. She couldn't hear the creature whispering at her.
Yeah,
which Belinda did when it leapt on her back.
And previously, the Doctor said it whispered his name.
Yeah, the Doctor could...
When he told him something that we don't know.
Yeah, when the Doctor got close to...
He seemed a bit upset.
I think there's another link to the royal family here. We've had the royal family were werewolves in Tooth and Claw.
Yes.
The etiquette when meeting the Queen... is to never turn your back on her.
Yes.
And she won't turn her back on you because she knows she'll kill you and she can't be sure which one of you can be trusted. So you're not to turn your back on her.
Mm.
Yeah. That came to me in a dream.
Yes. But we had the leader of the party who, when it leaps to Belinda, we had the leader of the party taking the sniper shot.
Yes.
Yeah. She was a very good shot.
Yes. Yeah. Very
good
shot.
Stunned to the heart.
Yeah. So just enough to kill Belinda for a few seconds before I can bring her back.
Revivable.
So whoever kills the host becomes a new host.
Yeah.
And then she goes and chucks herself in the well.
So it falls backwards into the well, so make sure nobody's behind her.
Yes. Did a backwards swan dive.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
So I don't know if we're meant to assume the creature had leapt out of her
As she was falling?
I just always thought that there was more than one. Why would there only be one creature?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially after that much time. Mm. Surely it's just the Doctor and the Midnight crew encountered one, and this was another one.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what Alice was doing. She was there 15 days, apparently.
Whimpering, mostly.
Yeah, and if there's no one there, she doesn't have to sit on that box in the middle of the room the whole time. No. Presumably she was just doing the dehydrated food packs for herself.
Rehydrating.
And when she needed to go, well, there was a big hole there. So.
Just waiting to be rescued, but yeah.
But no, it was an absolutely cracking episode.
It was.
Really, really enjoyed it.
Unlike Midnight, I had no problems with this one.
You had problems with Midnight?
Yes.
Well, we've probably talked about that, so let's not talk about it again.
We're not going to go into it here.
You'll only make me cross.
I acknowledge Midnight is an excellent episode, but I just didn't like it.
Fair enough.
But like Alien, it was very suspenseful.
Oh, it was a nice change
of pace.
Yes. The empty corridors, the wrecked base.
Yeah, the finding all the bodies.
Yeah,
it looked a bit like the Satan Pit, didn't it?
All the yellow bars.
Had that vibe.
They have to station itself.
But we had updated spacesuits.
Yeah, they look a lot better.
Yeah.
Very snug.
Which incidentally happened to be lucky that the helmets fitted the spacesuits that Belinda and the Doctor got out of the TARDIS.
Imagine if they put the orange spacesuits on. Oh, that would be embarrassing.
They look very good. Although probably quite hot. I think it's made out of neoprene or whatever wetsuits are made out of.
Well, again, watching The Unleashed and whatever, it was very hot in the studio and the set, but when they were out on location.
Yeah, it was freezing cold.
Filmed at night.
Also, we had the almost obligatory second in command who was trying to
undermine
for about two minutes, didn't he? And then he got killed. In fact, the commander actually sort of killed him deliberately.
She asked Alice to face.
Well, he was trouble, and she needed the rest of her people to get out.
One, he knew he was trouble. Two, he had told Alice to continue facing him no matter what, otherwise she would have shot him.
Yeah.
So the way he kept moving, he was taking out.
Yeah.
They lost three guards because of him.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was interesting how they could throw these subtitle translators over to someone else to get their attention.
Yeah, they said something like transfer to Adam, and then it would come up on Adam's one. And interesting etiquette lessons, well, not just etiquette, but bloody politeness, is not turning your back when you're talking with a deaf person.
Yeah,
little hard to, to make out what you're saying.
Yeah. I think that was something which came up either in the read-through or on set, where Rose was saying that's a common thing that happens.
They did ask her when they sent her the script.
Mm.
Incidentally, she's got another show going to care homes and the like where some of the elderly people, their hearing's going, and is teaching sign language.
She went
to the first one with a sign language teacher, and they ended up taking them all out to a deaf community centre to play bingo.
Right.
And one of the women really got it quite quickly and was flirting openly.
Openly
flirting. This woman was 90 if she was a day. But yeah, so she's got her own... show.
Yeah,
good
on her.
Yeah.
Right, so we obviously thoroughly enjoyed this one.
Mm-hmm.
It was creepy, it was clever, it was awesome.
I'm going to have to assess this later when they're all out, but I think it is certainly the top or the best so far of this season, personally.
I'm sure it's my favourite. It's
way up there. As I said, I'm going to have to reassess, but at the moment...
Well, of course, we had the obligatory 2 seconds of Mrs. Flood.
This
time she was a commander on a view screen.
Getting around now.
Very Susan Twisty.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Because up till now, she hadn't been.
Except for the previous one.
Yes. Where she went back in time. Now she's gone forward.
Now she's off planet completely.
Yeah.
So she's turning up wherever the Doctor is.
Yes.
My money's still on her being Loki.
Okay.
Yeah. If we're doing gods and things... There's a Loki vibe to her, but we'll see. Right, tell us what you thought of The Well by writing to us at show@staggeringstories.net.
I do want to quickly say, though,
it's
another situation where the Doctor didn't try too hard to stop somebody sacrificing themselves to solve the situation.
Yeah. Well, again, it's
no
like Midnight. He didn't solve the situation. He just got out alive.
Yeah.
And he was following her down the corridor quite quickly with her back to him.
as we discussed,
they've got to be there a little while.
Yeah.
Now that takes us on to the next episode, Lucky Day. Shall we pause for music? I don't think we should.
Would that be Kylie Minogue's Lucky, Lucky, Lucky?
Completely different music. Excellent choice.
Oh, no.
Somewhere out in the world at the moment, there's a young man called Jason Howarking. If he'd wandered through my living room yesterday when we were watching Lucky Day, I might have set the dog on him. I know she's got no teeth,
good
but
gummy.
She can suck really badly.
Jonah.
This one was very Dr. Light. This one was filmed at the same time that they were filming Robot Revolution.
Yes.
So it focused on Ruby
mm-hmm.
and podcaster who's fascinated by UNIT and all things like that and gets it on with Ruby, and he's a lovely guy. Isn't he lovely? Oh, he was nice.
I think we both looked at each other and said, yep, by the end of the episode, he's dead.
Yeah, because he was nice.
Yeah.
And he gave Ruby a nice kiss and was very, very sweet. And then it turned out, no, he's not. He's a bastard.
Yeah.
And the actor did such a cracking job of it that, oh, I would have kicked him in the scrotum if he'd come near. Yeah.
That's very insufferable. Yes.
Oh, so, think tank.
Think tank? Is it meant to be the same think tank?
I'm assuming it is. I'm assuming that since 1976, 75, they've been holding a grudge against UNIX.
Could be.
50-odd years later.
That's the first thing I went to when he pulled open the jacket with think tank.
Ketterworld's robot in the world,
Oh, God. Yeah. This is one of the ones I haven't looked online, but it's going to be a lot of the, it's gone woke brigade.
Yeah.
This was brilliant. This was Sunmakers-esque in the, you know what I mean, in the message, you lot, you so-called influencers, you flat earthers, you people who are all, oh, the government's out to get you, etc., etc. Mm. Oh, why did he scratch his nose like that? He's clearly a Russian spy.
Also,
you're all so annoying.
Also, the people who won't believe
the science, truth,
and certain political leaders at the moment.
Well, this is the whole point, and it's like I think that was the Doctor's speech. We talk about each Doctor having a speech, and I think that was Shuti's one about just the constant noise, and it's exhausting trying to cope with these people.
Yeah. Yeah. Stamp on the truth, choke our bandwidth, and shred our patience.
But we all won't know what happens. He ends up being faced with a Shriek.
Yes.
Who's, as I think someone's pointed out, looks remarkably like the demon dogs from Ghostbusters. But when Ruby saved him, he then does...
An immediate
you'll know, Scott, you're surrounded by children a lot.
Yeah.
When two children are fighting and one of them's clearly lost and you break them up and the loser stands up and goes, that didn't hurt. That's exactly what he did. Sort of like, oh, you special effects have improved.
It was a nice bite because I wasn't expecting it and it made me jump at the same time, but deserved.
I was a little bit disappointed that the Doctor didn't Family of Blood him.
If I had a problem this episode, it's just the general idea that this sort of thing is real, too real.
It is completely.
Putting it into Doctor Who implies that it can be solved by the Doctor easily, but they can't.
Well, they didn't let the Doctor solve it easily because the guy still, get off my planet. Like, he didn't listen to a word the Doctor said.
You did have that line in Lux. Sometimes I overthrow planets. Sometimes I wait for them to overthrow themselves.
Yeah.
It was a cracking episode again.
There was lots of emotion in this episode. Yeah. I was really happy for Ruby when they got together.
Yeah.
I thought, she had another story arc to go now that she'd left the Doctor. And it sort of dealt with her struggling to adjust.
Which they all must do.
What we saw with Sarah Jane in School Reunion.
But also, there was a lot of hate boiling in me for the podcasters and everything, ironically.
And certain parts of the mainstream media who didn't even try to question him. And I'm sorry, lady from the one show I know. Yeah. But they went with it.
It's, what is it, BGB and Fox News.
BGB?
Yeah, the British version of Fox News.
Oh, GB News.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so much frustration in there that these people, some of them, as the Doctor said, you're drawing on people's insecurities. Some of them might not believe half the stuff he's telling them, but he's getting off on making them follow him and telling them what they want to hear.
Yeah, making lots of money.
Yeah, lots of money
the
out
little
of it.
Power trip.
And he insulted the Brigadier.
Yeah.
That's the scene. Did Kate know that the scientific advisor had the taser and that she would... No, because she took it from the soldier, didn't she?
Ruby took it from the soldier.
But had Kate lost it at that point? Had she gone from this serious, upright, staunch person that she is... Yeah. To someone who was just beyond pissed off that not only was he doing what he'd done, but he'd also peed all over everything her father stood for.
I also thought, you know, she was aware that he had a live camera feed and that he'd convinced the world that UNIT was fake and that they were stealing money from the government.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do maybe would be to let him be gnawed to death live on camera.
And has Kate and Colonel Ibrahim got a thing going on?
There was a moment with the chocolate coffee.
We had a moment in the last...
In the finale.
And we had another moment here. They're working late together.
Go for it, Kate. And they got to go in a helicopter. How cool would that have been to see a helicopter flying overhead with UNIT on the side?
Demons was the last time we had a proper... I know you've seen the TARDIS being lifted by helicopters and whatever, but I think Demons was the last time...
Battlefields?
Possibly.
Brigadier's picked up.
Yeah, by Zbigniew.
Zbigniew survives. Can't remember the name of the pilot who doesn't make it.
I thought that was Zbigniew.
No, Zbigniew was
the pilot.
Zbigniew was in the helicopter.
Anyway, we're not talking about that.
But it was quite scenic, wasn't it? Filmic. Yes. Where they'd shot it. The helicopter shadow.
I wondered if it was Oldbourne.
Yeah, it didn't.
It was dark and there was the open patch of ground and the church.
Yeah. Yeah. For a few seconds, I thought it was Ledworth.
I thought it might have been Ledworth for a short time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, it isn't. It's somewhere very similar.
There's plenty of English villages with green and a church and a pub.
Yeah, still dotted around.
Yeah.
They kind of had the base under siege, but the pub under siege. But it wasn't played for too long, unfortunately. I would have liked more of that, if anything.
That girl shouldn't be allowed in pubs.
Yes.
And watching the behind the scenes, I like the fact that the shriek was done with all complete animatronic modern model making techniques. But the fake shriek was done with techniques that they used back in the 70s.
The
clay moulds and...
The old rubber.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that Ruby's collecting mums. She's got her real mum, her mum, and now Kate.
Kate.
Yes.
Was there a line that one of her mums has got a boyfriend now? Is that right?
She was giving a lowdown on what's been happening to her.
Her actual dad, but that's a different story that she's not going to go into.
It's complicated.
So is this Conrad guy going to... Well, obviously he seems to be let out of prison by Mrs. Flood.
She's got
now
the keys.
Not subservient. She seems to be actually turning...
Interfering.
Evil.
He will come back.
He's going to be in the finale, presumably.
Yeah, you'd think. I know it's not nice, but I hope he comes to a sticky end.
And it's a bit interesting because as a kid, he met the Doctor, which is where this all started off. It's very Elton Pope sort of thing at the beginning. They love monsters, tracking the Doctor down. And by the end, when he meets the Doctor, he accepts it all. He believes the Doctor is a time traveller.
Yeah, get off our planet.
Talks about different companions he has. Belinda, who he hadn't met at that point. So clearly he does believe in this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yet he's pretending for his own gain that it isn't real.
Exactly. That's what the Doctor said, and that's what Kate said. He knows full well it isn't. He's got rich off of this. As they said, he's a tax dodger. Yeah. He's bought his mum a home in wherever, the Costa Rica.
And he's got three houses himself, isn't he? Yeah.
But so he's just... I don't know, I'm not going to mention that. No politics. He's doing what other people in British politics are doing.
Yeah.
They're backing a horse they don't believe in just for their own gain.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he knows he can say what the hell he wants. Because
he's got a certain amount of listeners who believe every word he says.
And all it needs is for one of them to tell another one and suddenly it snowballs.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really made me want to kick him was when he would tap the camera and go, "The world's watching."
The adults are speaking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was
I hate that phrase. I really do.
Especially to her, and she's 20 times the person he is.
Yes.
But I did like all the hashtags that were trending by the end. Hashtag I stand with unit. Hashtag hot taser girl.
Yeah, if only it was that easy in real life. Did strike me as, okay, that was a very quick and easy resolution to this.
The thing is, it won't be resolved though. That's just, we know us, you know yourself, trending. You're trending positively one morning, and then by the evening it's negative, or you're just not there at all.
So it
was just that moment while that piece of video was remembered that those hashtags were out there.
So it's clearly setting up later in the season.
Yeah,
I assume, anyway. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, hopefully, because the doctor said that he dies in prison, engulfed in anger, when his heart gives out.
Is that before he's let out?
Yeah, but
this is the thing. It might be that that's how he ends up.
Maybe. Yeah.
But also, Flood is moving in time, so she could have altered something.
Yeah,
that's always been the issue with Doctor Who. You've got multiple time travellers.
Yeah.
Interfering with time, at what point does it become clear to another time traveller that a different time traveller has changed history? Yeah. Have they got some kind of combined now point, and then when that time traveller has done it in now, it then affects the past for them?
So confusing!
It's very...
My brain just wibbled out of my ears.
It doesn't work if you think about it too hard.
No, you don't think about it. That's your problem.
Now, Jean, apparently, it may be her COVID-ridden brain, did like this one. She liked stuff with Unit and with Kate.
Yep.
But she didn't like this one. She said on Facebook she wondered if she'd just missed something because everyone else was raving about it and she didn't.
I will admit, I'm not wanting to shove a rent in it. It's a good episode. I enjoyed it. It's not been my favourite so far.
No, I would class it as okay.
Yeah.
It felt like all the stuff with the relationship building just dragged. They'd spent too much time. They needed to build up that relationship between the two characters of Conrad and Ruby. But I was just sitting there halfway through thinking, just get on with it. I don't care about this relationship. I don't care. Just get on with the story. By the time they've got to the point of the reveal, we're way in. We are literally in the final act.
Yeah.
And it took too long to get there for me.
Well, yeah. I disagree with that. I thought it was lovely.
My other half thought it was middling.
Yeah.
That was his review.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people yesterday at the event were saying that they needed to rewatch it to get more from it. But I was fine. I think it worked for me because I really hated him by the end of it.
Wound me up. Kudos to the guy. He did a cracking job.
He did.
Yeah. But I physically wanted to harm him by the
end. It was.
Yeah.
And it did sort of turn Love and Monsters on its head, the episode, didn't it? It was like evil Linda.
Yeah, it was.
Instead of praising him, trying to find him, they were there to sort of use him, make money out
put
of him.
The boot in.
The little boy who played young Conrad was in Lockwood & Co.
Oh,
you know, they had a character called Canary, little boy that basically got intel. That was him.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. He was much littler.
Yeah.
And I recognised his mother. I'm going to look her up now because that was annoying me.
I didn't like her at the time in that episode. I don't know why
she
bought her a house.
She was very...
It was, I know we only spent less than 5 seconds with her, but she was a very one-note, nasty...
Is that Moira Clark? Kirsty Hoyles?
I think so.
So did he take the antidote in the end?
He did not. He said he didn't, and he clearly didn't, or it wouldn't have hunted him down.
We didn't see him take the antidote. Whether he's been intravenously injected with it is another matter.
I don't know.
That's where I've seen her. Sorry, I saw an episode of Call the Midwife.
Good memory.
She looked less dignified in that.
If I had another complaint about it, it would be that why have we got a Dr. Light episode this season? We had two last season. That was because Chuty was conflicted in his scheduling.
Mm.
But here we've got 8 episodes and we've got a Dr. Light in an 8 episode season where, as far as we know, there's no particular clash.
Well, they were filming two at the same time.
Yeah, but why are they double banking at all?
I can understand that. It's just said he's filming robots. But
used to be in New Who back when we started getting the Chris specials finished at the beginning.
Yeah.
They'd have to double bank because they didn't have any more time they had on a regular season, even though they're doing an extra episode. Here they're only doing 8 as it is.
Yeah.
And we've got more money. Money is time. Why are we double banking?
Yeah.
I really had no problem with it being Dr. Light because I was completely sold by the story. I was so involved in it. I mean, I couldn't have been that cross without really enjoying the story.
I think Unit made it for me this time. If they hadn't have been in the story, then I would have noticed not being there more.
Perhaps a bit of a setup to spin off
the war between the land and the sea. Yeah, maybe he moves over to that series and causes more trouble for them.
Who knows? Certainly, re-establishing units. Or I assume they're going to be in the finale.
Yeah.
It seems to be a bit of a pattern.
And Think Tank has got to be deliberate. There's no reason for it otherwise.
RTD, he knows what Think Tank is from
exactly.
Classic.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it could be no reason for it. It could just be an Easter egg for the Minmongs.
It might be.
It could be,
yeah. I love the way you pointed out to the rest of the world when you should have just been circling this room.
Well, I don't consider myself a Minmong because I haven't complained, moaned or bitched about it. I've always enjoyed something in there.
I'd like to point out we've got like 400 and, probably about 440 episodes of him in which there's quite a bit of moaning, complaining and bitching.
Yeah, listen.
There isn't.
You indeed.
We can find some proof right here if you want.
But
pause to insert Keith bitching.
I moan and bitch because that is aspect of the podcast. I don't sit there and go online and go, worst episode ever.
That's only because you don't know how social media works.
No,
we sit at home and you tell me.
I do know how social media works. It just winds me up that the fact that people will go, it's a terrible episode, I hate everything. Shooty's the most terrible doctor. The show has been sliding down for the past 20 years. Why the are you watching it? Then?
Yeah, I agree with you there. Yeah.
Bit of a shame.
I love you.
I love you too.
Bit of shame we didn't get much Belinda. She was only in the cold open.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. But we did get Cherry Sunday back.
Yes.
We did. Yes. I was so glad. And I love the way they seem to have become an even bigger family now.
Yeah.
They're all in there together.
As you said, collecting mums. She was going online, checking him out. If you scroll down, there's a topless photo. Yeah.
But it did give an interesting peek into how companions are affected by travelling with him.
Yeah.
Especially the ones who were just dumped.
Yeah.
Or rather than the ones who choose to stay.
She is suffering from PTSD.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to do the predictable thing of joining unit like all the other companions. She wants to do it slightly differently.
Where was Mel? She was
was in Sydney because there was something going on in the harbour.
Was it? Okay. You got sent away conveniently.
That's something weird going on in the harbour.
Yeah.
So they sent the ginger person to Sydney, Australia, where it's really hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the name of the guy on the little Segway? He's gone again.
Oh, I've forgotten the kid's name. Yeah. Lenny Rush.
Yeah, it's the actor's name. I can't remember the
character's
name.
He wasn't on shift.
We still don't know what's happened to Petunia. Not Petunia. Osgood.
Oh, yes. Petronella.
Thank you.
Petunia.
Something beginning with P.
So we got Shirley Bingham back.
Yeah.
She's always good.
And what was that robot that saw?
The Vinx.
I love the way he just hid in the floor.
He got out of it pretty quickly.
Knocked down.
I suppose that's the serious reason for that, though, could be if the place is under attack and someone getting their hands on his tech.
Mm.
Would be a bad thing, so he has to secure himself. That's what he'd tell you if asked.
Yeah. He still feels a bit CBBC to me, the Vlinx. I don't know how they're going to deal with him in the spin-off.
Yeah.
If that's going to be a bit more grown up.
It depends. It depends where the spin-off is going to be face pointing.
You know, we'll see.
Anything else?
No, I think so. We're halfway through.
Yeah, halfway through the season, and there hasn't been one that we haven't liked so far.
The quality has been good.
I think 1 and 4 for me were middling to good.
Yeah.
But 2 and 3 were both excellent.
Agreed.
On the whole season so far has leaned to good rather than...
Oh, yes.
Excellent. Now, tell us what you thought by writing to us via show.
At
staggeringstories.net.
So, Hedda Pertwee, what did you think? That's a... interesting take on things.
Sort of looks happy.
Why have you got an octopus on your head? Oh,
is that Inky or is that Dinky?
That's second Dinky. 1, 2, 3.
Hello, Hedda Pertwee.
Hello, Inky McSquirtsalot. Various Dinky McSquirtsalots. Hello, Sandy the Stormtrooper.
Hello,
Sweetums. Various goats.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock. Terence.
Dave Zilla. The Mighty. And a Moomin in a hat.
Dun, dun, dun!
Oh, you've got Jodie Bear. Hello, Jodie Bear.
Yes, had that for a while. Yes.
But that's not the only Who we've been watching, is it?
It's not. Oh, I suppose no, you're right.
No. You weren't here for this one.
I wasn't, so I'm going to disappear into my tablet while you lot talk about the BFI.
Yes, we've been celebrating the 20th anniversary.
20 years of new-ish Who.
Yes, although it's very much the Eccleston year.
Yes, that concentrated.
The big
on,
old
yes.
comeback.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Where they yesterday. Filmed Frontier in Space, didn't we? We went to South Bank.
We went to the Earth Empire.
We did.
With the BFI and the National Film, British Film Institute.
British Film Institute, yes. They showed two episodes from Eccleston's era.
Yep, Dalek and Father's Day.
Yes. Both directed by the same guy,
Joe Ahern.
We
he
had
was there for both.
We watched the episode and there was a little a question and answer session with the first one. It was Joe Ahern.
Writer Robert Sherman was there.
Yep. That's it.
And then we had
Corey. I can't remember his name now. Van Staten.
His assistant who takes over at the end.
Yeah. That's it. I can't remember the actress's name, but she was first in Stargate.
Yeah, you mentioned Stargate to me at the time. Yes.
And it's quite funny, because in Stargate, she played Gua Ward with a British accent.
Yes.
And then she came over to England to play someone with an American accent. I think she's Canadian, isn't she?
I think she is, yes.
Oh, is she? Yeah. Okay. So, Anna Louise Plowman, Diana Goddard, and Corey Johnson,
That's it.
It was quite entertaining. I mean,
it was really good.
This is 20 years ago now.
I know.
It's
and you know, they're well watched episodes. Yeah. But as soon as that Dalek breaks free of its cell, I was really excited again.
It still holds up. It does still. Both episodes still hold up quite well.
They look pretty good on the big screen.
Yes. Yeah.
You could tell when the CGI Dalek was CGI Dalek.
Yeah, going up the stairs.
As I said before, one, this is a 20-year-old CGI.
Yes.
And two, I am much more forgiving my CGI on Doctor Who than I seem to be on other shows.
It's surprising how much emotion you've got invested in that one Dalek, isn't it?
Mm.
Once you realise it's infected and it's beginning to question everything.
Yeah.
And I did like seeing Rose's old Nokia phone again and hearing all the noises.
Yep.
Did she have a 3310?
She did, yes.
Oh, the best phone ever made.
Nuclear war, pestilence, zombie plague, you'll still have the Nokia.
And I think one thing I'd missed from Dalek was how much comedy there was. It wasn't until I was sitting in a sort of cinema
that
people were laughing and I was feeling the actual comedy from the episode.
Comedy is always better watched in company.
Yeah.
With other people laughing.
Occasionally, I think people are laughing at some of the unintended comedic bits. After 20 years.
Corey was very animated during the interview, wasn't he?
He was,
Very
good.
Very bombastic, very animated. Yeah. Lots of good things to say about it, particularly about the director and the writer who happened to be on stage with them.
That's where we found out the different writing styles for the different periods that he's written that.
And Rob Sherman's wife was there as well, somewhere in the audience, and I think she played Frobisher's girlfriend for Big Finish Audios.
Oh, did she? Okay.
I did not know that.
In a story he wrote, ironically. Yeah. I think they got married after that.
Oh, it's how they met.
And I loved hearing his story about her disappointment when she realised he was writing the Dalek story.
That's a shame.
He actually got her to note down all of the low points of a Dalek, like can't get upstairs, sound silly,
sucker arm.
Yeah. And then he worked with those to dispel the myth.
To reinvent them.
Yeah, basically. Make them threatening. And that the face-crushing scene was meant to be a lot more violent, the head was swamped and it was throwing him against the wall.
Yeah. It's interesting, he was saying they weren't sure they even allowed to kill anybody.
They weren't sure, and then they have to stun everyone.
Yeah.
No, that would not have worked with Dalek.
Yeah, I mean, imagine trying to do Doctor Who without being able to kill any characters.
Yeah.
That's it, and he wrote it not knowing if they were allowed to use the Daleks at all.
He wrote it, if I remember rightly, he wrote it for the Daleks.
Yeah.
And then halfway through, I think it was the second or third draft, he was saying, they lost the right to do the Daleks.
Yeah.
So Russell T gave him the Toclophane, and then they got them back.
Yeah.
But he's saying that improved the script because it showed that it could work without Daleks.
He had to rethink it to make it a strong enough story, even with the Daleks not there, didn't he? And then so he took elements of the Toclophane story, like the Doctor being tortured by Van Staten.
Yeah, that whole torture scene was introduced because of that.
Yeah, and it's very fast-paced, that Dalek story, isn't it? I know that some people moan about that modern Doctor Who being fast-paced, but that worked for me. It really ramped up the tension. Well,
I think I mentioned it in when we did Rose way back when. It's like entering the story at episode 3.
Yeah. And Father's Day. I thought it was quite interesting that Joe Ahern couldn't even sit there through it because he was aware that when he rewatched it quite recently, he was already welling up.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for that one, we had Camille Cadori, didn't we?
Yes.
And she turned up a bit late, about halfway through the episode.
I think probably quite deliberately to avoid having to watch too much of it.
Yeah.
Can I just say, who am I, love? You're my daddy. It's like the railway children all over again.
Yeah, and none of that emotion leaves. Even rewatching it so many times, it's not just that last bit when you can sort of see Pete working it out from the, you called me dad, and he's piecing it together. You're already welling up knowing what's coming.
It was a cracking performance. It's Sean Dingwall, wasn't it?
I didn't well up. Mm. I may have had a bit of dust. It was a very dusty cinema, so I may have had something in my eye, but I didn't cry. No, I didn't.
And it was nice hearing the line, "Don't touch the baby."
Oh, we had shoutbacks.
We did have a couple of shoutbacks.
People were shouting.
Yeah, it's when Eccleston is talking to Rose, and then Rose the baby, and Rose comes in, and they apologise and say, "Instructions, whatever you do," and the whole audience turn around and don't touch the baby.
But the highlight of that second panel really was Murray Gold, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I've seen interviews and they're very brief in documentaries, but to actually see him in life...
I got the impression he's self-conscious and doesn't necessarily like talking to a big audience.
The centre of attention.
Yeah, that's what I get the vibe that he doesn't like that.
Yeah.
No, as says, he normally works alone.
Yeah.
He's barely met anybody.
Yeah.
Even Russell, he's very rarely met, maybe at the proms, things like that, but otherwise he works remotely.
Yeah.
I think he lives in New York, doesn't he, or something like that.
And he's now been working on the show longer than Russell or anyone else, basically, isn't he? 15 out of 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good to see him in particular.
Yeah, and he got an award.
He did, yeah. This was co-produced, this particular event, with Dwaz and the BFI. So Dwaz being Dwaz, they like to give out these awards.
Yeah, he got a Dwaz award.
And right, so he got an award for, I can't remember what it was.
Achievement
Award.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Frank Skinner was presented it for some reason.
Yeah.
Apparently he's a big Who fan.
Oh, he is.
He's still in the TARDIS somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah. No. They should have... He should have been, but no.
And they apparently knew each other somehow.
Briefly,
I don't know how. Given he doesn't get out, Murray Gold
very much. He's got that dedication in one of the LPs, hasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know why.
They went to school together.
I don't know.
And it was nice that when they handed the questions over to the audience for that session, that everyone basically wanted to ask Murray questions, didn't they? They didn't care about anyone else.
Got a few questions for other people, but they
finally someone asked, when are we going to get a CD?
Yes.
When are we going to get a release of this? And
apparently.
He hinted, didn't he, that he's going to have to put it all together and do some sweets and things like that.
He did effectively promise us that he would bring out music that hasn't been brought out already.
Yeah.
So I presume it's going to include season 10, series 10.
I hope so.
And also these first two new ones.
Yeah. Has the music from the specials dropped? Giggle and Wild Blue Yonder. And,
nothing.
Yeah, so it's got
nothing
that.
Nothing since Flux, I think.
You got that to come.
I did like in The Well how he sort of redone those classic scores from the Tennant era.
Yeah.
They were nice, really sort of moody remixes, weren't they?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Really good event. And went on, 3.5 hours? Quite a long...
Yeah. Well, so both episodes are something like 45 minutes.
And about an hour and a half, but we had...
And then the question and answer sessions around Q&A's.
At least as long as the episodes again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good day.
Very good day. Thank you, Gene and Bill, for organising that. I still owe her £6.
Payment in kind.
Okay.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Crumbly's Corner!
Hello, Crumbly here. Sorry I'm not at tonight's podcast, but I am currently enjoying the bank holiday weather with Fake Crumbly in the fair county of Hampshire. However, as always, I would like to share my thoughts and opinions about what has been discussed here tonight, What can I say about the well? Well, it certainly hits the ground running. The Doctor and Belinda land on a seemingly deserted planet, accompanied by a group of troopers, intent on finding out what happened to the inhabitants of a base on the planet, only to find out almost everyone in the base has been killed, and there is only one survivor remaining. This episode is a worthy successor to the 2008 episode Midnight, where a malevolent, invisible entity is killing everyone. From the opening scenes where the troopers land on the planet, the episode has a very Aliens tone to it, with the troopers arriving on the planet, however, without the dropship from the USS Sulaco, to the suspenseful feeling that they explore the base. No facehuggers or acid-drawing monsters here, but an invisible, intangible, but deadly foe awaits them. It adds a whole new meaning to the pantomime phrase, "He's behind you." However, the creature in Midnight did have a physical form in one of the cars that it took over. I think the creature being alluded to as a presence, I think it makes it more sinister. Something caught in a fleeting glimpse. Out of the corner of your eye, you turned to look, but it was gone. That would make a very good song lyric. However, the Doctor wasn't comfortably numb, and as soon as he found out, you know, what the planet was, Midnight, he recognised what he was up against and was devising a way of vanquishing it. An entertaining and very claustrophobic episode indeed. Now, on to Lucky Day. First and foremost, all I can say about Coronet is, what a bastard. The episode marks a welcome return for Ruby Sunday, Unit and Kate Lethbridge-Stewart. Ruby is missing her adventures in time and space, but a new adventure beckons when she appears on a podcast hosted by a very charming young man who met the Doctor as a young boy. A romance blossoms and Ruby starts to reconcile herself to a new life without the Doctor. The creature, the Screech, it provides an interesting adversary, but it plays second fiddle to the real threat in this episode, that of false information spread by influencers, social media, and the internet in general. Unfortunately, there are people out there who are so blinkered by their own beliefs and want to spread them sort of, you know, however they can, despite the truth jumping up and down in front of them. The final scenes where Conrad is rightfully imprisoned and is visited by Mrs. Brian May, or even Mrs. Flood, only serve to make us wonder who she truly is. I do have a couple of theories as to who she is. Well, she must have special powers to go back and visit Sharon Watts in a dream sequence in the 40th anniversary of EastEnders. But I think, one, she may be the latest regeneration of the Master, or two, think Riversong, Melody Pond, Mrs. Flood. It does have you pondering. Anyway, that's enough of my inane ramblings for now. I'll be back in the studio for the next podcast. So until then, this is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Right, we've had feedback.
Yay! Thank you very much.
We've had a very long letter from Jay.
Ooh. Hello, Long Jay.
Hello, chaps, chapesses, and of course, the head of Pertwee and his merry menagerie of miniatures and models.
Yep.
First off, something not podcast or fandom related, but just an amusing anecdote of relevance to you.
Right.
So happens that on a call with my parents, they informed me of some plan to merge the council for the area they live in, Reigate and Banstead, with another. Imagine my surprise when I immediately went searching for any news article about that, and the very first hit on Google was an article written by Fake Keith. Small world in it. Yay. Yeah. And now Doctor Who.
All right.
After what probably seemed like a fair bit of whiny arse complaints about the first two episodes, I was most pleasantly surprised by The Well.
Yeah.
I've taken a leaf out of El Presidente's book of late and have been doing my best to avoid teasers, trailers and news articles relating to any upcoming episodes for this season.
Good.
And, unlike a fair few people out there, I did not know that this was going to be a sequel to Midnight.
Yeah, likewise.
Nor did we. Being able to make the connection a few seconds before the Doctor did was so worth it to have avoided being spoiled beforehand.
Yes, yeah, that was good.
Midnight was such a wonderful episode by itself, and trying to do a sequel to it could have gone badly.
Yeah.
After all, there was much that we, or even the Doctor, just didn't know at the end of that episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If this offering had gone as far as allowing us to see far more or understand what this entity was all about, it could have really cheapened things.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it didn't. Yes, we saw glimpses of something moving, but it really was, if you blink, you miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to skip back a few seconds just to re-watch those bits, just to even slightly notice it. Though even those moments were fleeting and the entity itself was never completely revealed. What we did find out a smidgen more about, there is just still so much left to the mystery of it. Much like in Midnight, when we had a small number of people in the rover,
yeah.
much of the main action took place in that single space where Alice was being held. And with that many military types and unsettling things happening, you just knew that things were soon going to boil over. And indeed they did.
Yes.
Though as Alice was turning around to follow Carlo, I'm sure that there were moments when someone was directly behind her with their eyes open who didn't end up deaded.
Yep.
That aside, I loved this episode. Apart from the Mrs. Flood bit at the end, I really am getting a deja vu feeling here about the Earth being completely destroyed at some point in the past. It rather is starting to feel like retreading paths that have already been walked since the show's revival.
Yeah.
But my goodness, what a lot of Aliens references in this episode. Right from the dropship, well, Halo jump, to be followed by a base which has gone communication silent, through to nuke it from the nuke it from orbit line.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if it was known that this was going to be released on Aliens Day, that is, April the 26th, as dates are written in North America, 46. For LV-426 in Aliens.
Yeah, probably. Oh, yeah.
One final point about this episode, the outfits that the Doctor and Belinda chose just happened to be the exact kind of spacesuit gear that everyone else
had. That's true, yeah.
Now, we know that the TARDIS takes the Doctor where he's needed, but it is also now ensuring that he and his companion have the right kind of attire they need too.
Mm,
it could have ended rather badly had they chosen something different.
Well, yes.
Now on to Lucky Day. Another one that I mostly enjoyed.
Good.
Very much a Dr. Light episode, and indeed a Belinda Light one as well. With the rather large exception of the Sarah Jane adventures, this is a style of episode that we really have not gotten from Doctor Who very much. I think probably Love and Monsters was the only other episode that we've had that solely focused on the lives of people touched by the Doctor, without really involving the Doctor in the story. It's only been since the revival of the show, starting with School Reunion, that it started to touch upon what lives are like for companions once they'd left the TARDIS. One thread that's pretty much run through everyone we've revisited is that while they enjoyed their time travelling, they return back to the mundane with a lot of trauma that takes years, if not a lifetime, to unpack.
Yeah.
And that's where Ruby Sunday is right now. While she's back with her two mums and gran, we get the idea that it's been pretty hard for her to just do what every other person on the Earth does. Her finding Conrad and finding out that there's a small connection that they share might likely feel like a lifeline that she eagerly grabs. I'm sure that we all started rooting for her and Conrad as they were becoming a couple. So when there's the sudden and inevitable betrayal from him, we, the audience, absolutely feel for her. The next half of the episode is all the fallout from this, becoming heavily focused on the infiltration of London's version of the Avengers Tower, Unit HQ. Though here's where the problems with the story start to become apparent. Another great setup, but not being able to quite stick the landing. It's certainly nice to see Kate Lethbridge-Stewart and the gang back, except maybe the Vlinks.
Yeah, yeah.
Though apparently Mel is dealing with something in Sydney Harbour. I'm sure that Unit's standing after all this will in no way affect what's to come in the spin-off we're to get.
Mm.
But let's unpack what we got here. I really don't understand Conrad's motivations for trying to expose the lie of Unit, especially because he was witness to the TARDIS first materialising in 2007. Not sure if that was the start or end of 2007, yeah. But both were bookended by aliens of London in the form of the Sycorax and Rachnos, respectively. Unless these got completely unwritten by the many times the universe has ended since then.
Yeah.
Though he also witnessed Ruby and the Doctor in 2024, when they first encountered the Shriek. It's all good to say that alien invasions were elaborate special effects put on to convince people, but in both cases, there was no one else to witness these events except him. We've had other people, such as Clive, as well as Elton and his Scooby gang, who encountered or had heard of the Doctor that never fell down this path of conspiracy theories, but somehow Conrad did. I'm just not sure I see what pushed him to tread that path. He was a dick. Given Conrad's only brief glimpses of the Shriek in his 2024 encounter, I'm quite surprised he remembered enough to get convincing costumes of those critters made, not to mention his friends managing to recreate certain mannerisms the critters had. Aside to that, kind of weird to see guys in rubber, more like silicone suits, actually being guys in rubber suits. Now, where did he get those made, I wonder? Because those were cool costumes. Also, while they might have been able to affect the electrics in the pub, I'm not quite sure how they did the same with the bus signs and so on.
I did wonder that, yeah.
It also would be remiss not to talk about Kate's actions here, as she unleashed a shriek upon Conrad while it was being live-streamed. If you're trying to convince people that you're working on their behalf, maybe setting a monster to go eat someone on a live-stream is quite a questionable choice. I was really hoping that she had some trick up her sleeve where it wouldn't go as far as it did, but nope, seems like she was willing to go that far. The Brigadier had his moments, mm-hmm. blowing up a Silurian base, but I'm not quite remembering where he was willing to make a human sacrifice like this. We also have our standard appearance of Anita Dobson,
yeah.
really. I mean, Mrs. Flood at the end of the episode, and this seems to mark the first time where she actively seems to have recruited someone to work against the Doctor.
Yep.
Anyway, I think that out of the four episodes we've had so far, I'd rank this second, with the well being first.
Oh, yeah.
But come on, RTD, the way you're patterning this season is pretty much the same as the last one. Episode 1 was kind of goofy and set in space, space babies and the robot revolution. Mm-hmm. Episode 2 was campy and set in the past, featuring a member of the Pantheon, the Devil's Cord and Lux.
Yep.
Episode 3 was future, darker in tone, featuring a returning villain in some way, Boom with Villengard and the well with the creature from Midnight.
That's true.
Now, Episode 4, Dr. Light, featuring Unit and Kate, pub scene where someone is playing a prank on the companion, 73 yards and lucky day.
Yep.
And all the way through, a mysterious figure keeps popping up in vague yet menacing manner.
Mm.
In this second verse, same as the first here, the strength of Doctor Who's format has been that it's possible to do so many different kinds of story, but lately it really seems that it's falling into a very samey rut. Bah, I've done it again, ended on a grumble. I really don't mean to. Next time, hopefully, won't be the same. For now, cheerio, Jay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
To counterpoint Jay...
Oh, yes, God.
Yes.
That's the same pattern, more or less, that he did on his first run.
Really took until season 6
yeah.
for it to break out that pattern of where the two-parters were in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a formula they kept...
Yeah.
Right the way through to Moffat's first season, pretty much.
Yeah.
But the history of the previous RTD era is hard to follow, because obviously the 11th Doctor rebooted the universe at the end of Series 5.
And let's not even talk about Flux, where the entire universe is destroyed apart from Earth, or... Pretty,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't even know what
and,
happened there.
And I have to say... Yes, the TARDIS did supply the correct correct spacesuit. I know I pointed this out in my review, but if you remember the Doctor's wife, the consciousness of the TARDIS is only roughly connected to the present and can see past and future.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Did they go in there and they weren't sure and it just says display saying... TARDIS recommends this outfit.
Yeah, because this Doctor's more aware of what he wears this time.
Yes.
He's changing it every episode.
He's more in love with the look.
Yeah.
They did
when your butt's that nice.
They did exactly the same scene, shot for shot, of them going in to get changed and going back up and then coming out.
It's the third time they've done it, haven't they?
Yeah.
Invasion of Time. Bruiser says that he has to affix his internal structure. Because they all chose a different door and arrived in the same room.
Oh, yes. Reason why not.
Scott, would you like to read the next letter?
Yes, we have one from Matt T. Torquay.
Hello, Matt T. Torquay.
Hello there, Staggerers. Hope you're all lovely and very well.
You try.
So as I type, we're halfway through the latest season of our beloved Doctor Who. I thought I'd drop you a quick line and let you know my thoughts so far.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
The Robot Revolution. A good opener that I really enjoyed on the first watch, but didn't quite tickle the boxes on the second.
Mm.
The design of the robots was gorgeous. Yep. The Mrs. Flood appearance was a nice surprise. And Belinda was a breath of fresh air. Tones better than Space Babies. By a lot. Lux. This was the one I was looking forward to, and it didn't disappoint. Well, mostly.
Oh.
Jaw-dropping special effects, quite a creepy theme to it, and another god from the Pantheon. My only letdown in the story, that it was a little too falsely American with fake accents that were quite cheesy.
I haven't heard many complaints about it, but they did seem a bit off to me, but I know not to be American.
Yeah.
Maybe they were actually fine.
The Well... Wow. Just wow. What a proper thriller of an episode. The midnight reveal gave me goosebumps. Bumps. Proper creepy on every level.
Good.
Lucky day. This episode was very different to what we're used to, and I loved it for that.
Yeah, good.
Ironic that it was about a man with a crooked agenda on the day after Farage got his grubby little protuberances on a bit more power.
Yeah.
That's the name I wasn't going to mention.
Yeah.
A good study on what happens to his friends when the Doctor isn't around, and a good way to seed the unit setup for the war between land and sea.
Mm.
So far, we have 4 out of 4 hits. Long may it continue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for another 4 weeks anyway.
Yeah, hopefully.
I have no clue as to who Mrs. Flood is, and I hope the reveal will indeed live up to the hype.
Yeah.
I do think she was the person who picked up the toy maker's golden tooth that bound the master at the end of the giggle.
Oh, I forgot about that entirely.
Yeah. My stupidly crazy theory is that the 15th Doctor has been in the land of fiction since the giggle and will de-bigenerate back to Tennant.
Okay.
I think that's Jean's theory as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure because Flood was a bit more meddly this time round, wasn't she, this week? Will de-bigenerate back to Tennant, who is already secretly filmed four studio-bound adventures that will be released at different points over the next year.
One
Christmas special for this year. Fingers crossed. That way the show gives Shooty a nice get-out clause should he actually be leaving.
Right. Well, we'll see.
So what else have I been watching?
Yeah. What else have you been watching?
I've had a few visits to the cinema.
Okay.
Flo, a silent Latvian animated film about a cat.
I've heard good things about Flo.
Yeah. Is my favourite of the year so far. Mm. It's a truly gorgeous film that needs to be seen to be believed. I didn't gel with Mickey 17 at all. Left me a bit cold.
Okay.
The film Warfare is worth your time with a sound mix that will blow your socks off.
Oh, I'll keep my shoes on then.
On TV, I'm really enjoying Mobland over on Paramount.
It's on my to-watch list.
Is this right?
Also, the final season of Yellowstone.
Right.
Adolescence was amazing and a scary look into what life is like for modern teenagers. Oh, and I've decided to leave a certain Mr. Levine's fan page on Facebook. I use the word fan loosely, as it seemed a bit full of people who hate the current version of the show. Yeah. And the hatred and bile there is really quite sad. Yeah. I feel much better for not having seen such horrid posts.
Yes.
Yep.
I think I'd agree with that. I've sort of avoiding those sorts of things on YouTube as well.
Absolutely.
I don't like being tainted because I'm really enjoying the season.
Yeah. Me, I've for YouTube, I no longer follow that person. Mm-hmm. On Facebook, I will unfollow you.
Yeah.
If you're just posting vile, I'm not interested.
Once you watch one, the algorithm catches you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then that's all it suggests.
No, I don't.
The only Facebook Doctor Who page I follow is Doctor Who fans who actually like the show.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Anyway, keep smiling. If the last four episodes of Who are anywhere near as good as the first four, then we are in for a treat. From Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you,
Matt.
Yes, rightfully so. It's actually at the BFI. Was it Corey? One of the panellists actually said they didn't understand why there's this group of apparent fans who just love to be negative. Just
that's it.
Go get on with your life. Go and watch something else. Don't hate watch things.
That's what I can't understand. Why are you hate watching? Life is too short.
Yeah,
and on YouTube, it seems to be people that don't watch the show anyway that are giving out the most hate for it and jumping on the bandwagon. Yeah.
And to these people actually calling for it to be cancelled.
Yeah.
If they don't like it.
Doing that?
People who don't like it say it should be cancelled. No, there are millions of people who are enjoying it because you don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
Don't watch it.
Off.
Pretend it is cancelled all you like. Yeah. The rest of us can just enjoy it.
Just watch something else.
I mean, I'm with Scott on this. Yeah, I have to put up with too much social media horrible stuff in my working life. I do not want it intruding on things I love.
Yeah, the only saving grace I can say is it's not just Who. You get it with Star Trek, you get it with Star Wars.
Star Wars especially.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate, but that's just social media for you. But
yeah, it is.
I know it's almost like being in your own bubble to avoid these people, but at this point I think I'd rather just be in my own bubble.
The Facebook page I just mentioned is wonderful. The people chat about...
Give it another plug.
The episode. Doctor Who fans who actually like the show.
Okay.
People chat about the episode. You have people sharing pictures of their cosplay.
Yeah.
You have... My son is five and just made a Dalek, and it's a wonderful little, you know, sort of cheese grater with a colander on it. But everyone's like, "Oh, Jack, that's brilliant, mate. Well done." And it's just so, it's so peaceful. Give it a go. I think we've heard from someone else, haven't we?
We have.
I think we blatantly ignored her feedback last time.
We did. Maybe doing it again this time because it's a bank holiday here. We are recording some 5 or 6 hours early.
Sorry.
So
it was Catherine.
Yo, Catherine!
Terence, Mummy's about to speak. Pay attention.
Hello, Staggerers.
Hello,
Terence. Hello, Dave Zilla the Mighty. And hello, Head of Pertwee. Sorry to have missed out on feedback last time around.
Okay.
Busy getting ready for and then working AwesomeCon, which was not this time.
Oh, that's not good.
And I just couldn't squeeze it in. I imagine you'll have plenty this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I must say, I got excited when I saw the title of the current podcast. Clones and Carbolics? Are they talking Star Wars? Better yet, The Clone Wars or The Bad Batch?
No. Mickey 17.
Just a movie I hadn't heard of. Sounded interesting, though. Perhaps I'll seek it out on streaming when I don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, I think somebody else.
But I did pay for a new digital copy of Cobwebs and The Whispering Forest.
Oh, good.
Okay.
I have heard these stories before, but it's nice to own them legitimately.
Yeah.
They're good stories. And even if you don't finish out the trilogy, I'll probably get Cradle of the Snake as well.
We did, yes.
Bringing in an older Nyssa to pair with the younger Tegan and Turlo was a great idea. It's fun to hear the differences in their dynamic.
Mm.
The Whispering Forest is quite the cautionary tale of fundamentalism, something we all need to be on guard of, especially now.
Yes.
And that's the extent of my political commentary for today. Thank you for the review of Capital Cutaway. And I loved hearing that Katie Manning is just as mad as ever.
Oh, yeah.
First time I got to see her was at Chicago TARDIS, when I met y'all.
Yeah.
Hard as I tried, I could not get a picture of her on stage.
No one can.
She was constantly in motion.
Blah.
I've described her as a force of nature ever since, and I expect she always will be.
Yeah. Yep.
Katie was always a bright spot in my Twitter feed back before I deleted my account.
Mm.
Sounds like a great time was had by all.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad to hear the Capitol will be in Crawley next year,
yay,
back where it belongs.
Yes.
So apparently this show called Doctor Who is back.
Allegedly.
Robot Revolution.
Oh, yeah.
A good introductory story for Belinda, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of them, she gets thrown into the middle of an adventure and we're off to the races. Lots of fun time travel to be had. Seems this doctor has learned to sit still for longer periods of time after the events of Joy to the World, which opens up more possibilities. The design of Miss Belinda Chandra and the robots were well realized. The robots especially looked both cartoonish and menacing.
Yeah.
Loved their big, bulbous blasters.
Mm.
And we have Mrs. Flood back.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't seen me.
Very good.
Lux. This was different, but in a good way.
Yeah. Good.
Clearly, we're building on last year's theme of the Doctor taking on various gods.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the other way around?
Mm-hmm.
I know the episode was short and packed, but could there have been a line or something about the projectionist being fond of very out-of-date cartoons? That rubber band style of animation went out in the 1930s.
Yes, 20 years too late.
Just a few things that caught my attention. The various styles of animation were so well done, and interesting that the voice acting was also very cartoonish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Voice work is different from acting on video, as is stage acting.
Yeah.
But this felt like a good choice.
Yeah.
Did you know that Lux was a brand of soap back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s?
Yes.
Nope. I listen to a lot of old-time radio and have heard many advertisements for Lux Flakes and toilet soap. They also sponsored radio adaptations of popular movies back in the day. Mrs. Flood again. And pushing the May 24th date.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Penultimate episode.
What is it with RTD and mysterious older women? I appreciated the show addressing racism again.
Yeah.
They're not shying away from it as they did a lot of the sexism in Whittaker's era, at least. Time to get this wrapped up and out. Looking forward to more Doctor Who, Andor, which starts in a few days.
Oh, pretty good.
And to hear what you think about, well, pretty much anything, but especially this new season of Doctor Who. Be well, my friends. Anon, Catherine the Dragon Maker.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you. Yes, we're going to be talking about new Who for the next couple of podcasts.
Yeah.
And then who knows what? There's certainly a lot of stuff happening at the moment.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff on TV. Good time. Good time.
And so that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Oh,
but fear not.
Oh, no.
For next time, there will be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity. More news and reviews. More Who old and new.
I do fear.
So until that...
Be for Belinda, then.
Be for Belinda. Blooming...
Bollocking.
What is it with you and bollocks?
Bouncy.
It's my goat.
Bloated.
Bounce. dancing beautifully,
bubiously
along the boulevards
with the bluger
towards Bristol. This is me, Fake Keith, saying farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
God does not play dice with the universe. She plays an ineffable game of her own devising, which might be compared from some perspective of any other players, i.e. everybody, to be involved in an obscure and complex variation of poker in the pitch-dark room with blank cards for infinite stakes with a dealer who won't tell you the rules and smiles all the time.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 471, featuring Adam Purcell, Fake Keith, Scott Fuller, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
COVID.
Oh, what do I do with my bogey hand then?
I've got a dog here to wipe it on.
You've been marked by one of those demons from Doctor Who. Yeah.
The Shriek,
yes, your lucky day.
Not the Shrek.
That would have been a completely different kind of monster. But there was green ooze involved there as well. Hey Google, screen off.
Where's the sun gone?
Oh my God.
He's lost his hole.
Too many jokes.
It's been 2 weeks since he last plugged it in.
Do you want to shove it in there?
Sorry, my glasses are a bit...
That's me shoving it in there.
Stop being a perv. You'll break that chair.
Yeah, so you've got to move on from penis clouds to swearing cockatoos.
Excellent. Swearing cockatoos.
Yeah. I still haven't forgiven you for that, by the way.
It cheers you up as much as fluffy kittens that I hear you need a break from.
Oh, so many. The algorithm is just constant kittens. Husband?
Yes?
You know we watched A Thousand Blows, the Victorian boxing thing?
Oh, yes.
The woman who played the leader of the girl gang?
Yes.
She's a Crawley girl.
Is she?
I didn't know that until I've just read it now. Oh. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Anyway.
One of the characters in Andor is Robert Emsit.
Oh, yeah, he's a Crawley boy. Yeah. Well, he's a Hawley boy. Crawley and Hawley. He was in the Atlantis film of War Horse.
Okay.
He was in his dressing room. He was doing some Shakespeare.
Right.
At the theatre. And he had just had a shower and he was wearing just a towel.
Right.
And there was a knock on the door and he opened the door and it was Steven Spielberg. Because he wanted him for War Horse. And he's standing there in a towel wondering what the hell to say.
B for bastard?
L Linda. For lucky?
L for lucky. Oh, we did L last time.
Okay.
You have been listening to Staggering Stories podcast series number 471? Thank you. .net. Turn off your microphones.